Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. Today, listeners, we're so excited to once again be joined by our friend, Bridget Todd. Hello, Bridget.
Hello. I'm so excited to be back here with y'all.
Yay.
We're so excited to have you for the series that you have about women on the internet, where I suggested it be called Winternet, but no one replied.
Oh, so I think that's like Winternet. I think, you know, I like that. I think it's very positive. Women are winning the internet. We're winning it every day. I like it.
Okay, all right. See, that to me, I was like, someone has to explain to me why you said this again, because I'm confused. Is it because it's in winter? Is it because we're approaching winter?
No, women on the internet, Winternet.
Gotcha.
And you know, I was waiting after I sent that anxiously for positive feedback of my genius. The hours ticked by, no response. Anyway, I thought I'd bring that up just to comfort myself.
Perfect.
We are very glad to have you. And before we started recording, we were just chatting about the election and some of our thoughts around that. And I did want to ask, Bridget, since you're in D.C., how has that been?
Well, it's been a, can I swear, show?
Yeah.
It's been a bit of a show. What's wild is that, as we were just sort of talking about, it's not over. You know, here in D.C., our city, before the election, our city was sort of hunkering down, as I'm sure Atlanta was too, putting, you know, boards on the windows and that kind of thing. This weekend, there's going to be a Proud Boy March in D.C., so we're all sort of preparing for that. So it feels very much like, even though the election happened, we're still sort of dealing with the impacts. But I do know, even though I was not in D.C. on Election Day, all my friends and, you know, neighbors and community were, and it was a party on the streets. Like, I cannot tell you, I knew people were going to be happy when Trump was voted out of office. I didn't know it was going to be Sabrae champagne with strangers in the streets happy. I didn't know it was going to be people hanging out of like windows screaming in jubilation happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, I have never, the only thing I have seen that came even close, I happened to be in Paris when France won the World Cup. That's the only thing that came close to like the vibe on the streets in D.C.
Yeah, I heard that it was champagne sales in D.C. were higher than the past two New Year's combined.
Yes, I think we're just, you know, as a city, like I've lived in D.C. for most of my life. I think that people from D.C., like D.C. long haulers, we really have a lot of like city pride. And so I think when, you know, I lived here during the tail end of the Bush years, I lived here for all of the Obama years and then the Trump years. And I think the Trump years just were so sad and dark for people who lived in D.C. And they were like, oh, this guy's in my town, in my community. I once saw Ivanka Trump outside of a SoulCycle in DC. You know, it's like, you would see these people. And so I think the vibe is just so jubilant that we are rid of them. That we don't, that like, come January, they will leave and we might not have to see them again.
That is a very exciting thought.
You know what?
I immediately felt like brain space. It was amazing. Oh, it's like, just get freed up.
It's like taking off your bra.
It really was. I felt like, I think I just said, felt like I had just finished running. And I was at that point of just sitting exhausted. But at least one less thing was on us and on me. And I was like, yep, okay. And now I'm going to pass out because now I can rest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we can't.
No. And I do want to say, I've gotten in the habit of saying the date, which is always a risky proposition, but today is Friday the 13th, so I do know it, of March, just because
it's not
as we record this, of March. I was so proud of myself for the 13th.
You were so close.
There was a Friday the 13th in March.
Yeah, there was. You're correct. But it's not March.
See, I'm very well, yes. It's November. Okay. Thank you for that correction. Very important. But just because as we record this, Trump still hasn't
conceded.
So you never know. Things change really fast these days. But the last time you were here, Bridget, you were talking a lot about misinformation and disinformation and all of that, especially ramping up to the election and the intersectionality of it when we talk about gender or race. And now that the election has happened, that's something that you wanted to revisit, yes?
Exactly. You know, I have been studying and working on disinformation for a while, and I kind of erroneously thought, like, oh, well, when the election happens, we will be able to close the door on this Pandora's box of false information, online harassment, misleading stories, and the like. How wrong we were, you know? Luckily, election officials really were predicting that from the time the election happens, so from November 3rd, to the time that we had an uncontested, you know, winner that everybody agreed on, that would really be a hotbed of disinformation. And that really was exactly what we saw. So I'm happy that some people were at least prepared for it and, like, were taking the actions and the steps necessary to, like, get us all on the same page about what we would be seeing. Because that's exactly what happened. You know, on election day, even as votes were still being counted, Trump tweeted that he had won. He declared himself the winner. Obviously, that's, like, just a fabrication, is based right. in nothing. So yeah, we really saw false stories, disinformation, and like outright lies being spread about our election and our democratic process from election day itself.
Yeah, and ongoing, like, it's one of those things that I'm almost surprised it can still surprise me
right.
that so many people eagerly are buying into these things. Just, you know, the accounts of dead people voting, like millions of dead people voting, or Sharpies, all of these things. Yeah. And Sharpiegate, and seeing like Trump's Twitter feed, and every tweet was being flagged
right.
for all this passing of false information. And I know we're going to talk about, like, how has social media been. Have they been doing anything about this?
So I'm sure the last time I was here, I was crapping on social media platforms, and they deserve to be crapped on, by the way. I am not conceding that. But I have to give them this. I do think they are trying. They have spent a long time kind of dragging their feet. And so part of me wonders if it's like a little bit like too little, too late. But I want to give credit where credit is due. I do think some of these platforms just saw that like certain things just can't be left up. And so as you just said, Twitter was taking down or at least putting disclaimers on Trump's misleading tweets about the election. On election day and the day after, his Twitter feed looked like one of those redacted memos where things are like blacked out because he was tweeting so many false or misleading lies about the election. And so I was happy to see that. You know, Facebook has announced a couple of changes that they're making, including turning off their group recommendation feature so that, like, you know, if you are in a group that might, typically how people get radicalized on a platform like Facebook, you'll be in one group and then Facebook's algorithm might be like, oh, well, you enjoy your Second Amendment rights. Maybe you want to be part of this group that advocates for exercising those Second Amendment rights at a polling station, right? Like,
right.
you know, these groups inch up more and more aggressive and more extreme. And so they turned off that feature, and it's not clear when that feature will be turned back on. Actually, right before coming to chat with you ladies, I was in a call with Facebook senior leadership, and they are not, it's not clear when they are going to be turning this feature back on, but like, we think it should be at least until after inauguration, just so that, you know, yeah, we can close this chapter and move on to the next chapter. I'll say, like, you know, as much as I crap on the leaders of these social media platforms, it is better for them to do something than nothing. So I definitely want to give credit where credit is due in terms of them taking actual steps to, you know, address this.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I was shocked when I saw that they were going to until inauguration day. I was very happy, but I was surprised.
Right.
Sheryl Sandberg specifically has kind of been a part of this conversation, right?
Oh, yes. So what's interesting about Sheryl Sandberg, and I should say full disclosure, like, I bought her book, Lean In. There was a time in my life where her brand of feminism, I was like down to give it a shot. You know, I wanted to see what she had to say. I think it's been interesting how she has really been able to largely avoid a lot of the heat. Like, when you think about tech platforms behaving badly, I feel like Mark Zuckerberg really takes up a lot of the air in the room. And we kind of let Sheryl Sandberg, at least in my view, kind of skirt by. You know, I think for a while, I think there was a vibe that, you know, Zuckerberg and these tech bros at Facebook are just running wild, and Sheryl Sandberg is doing the best she can to, like, rein them in. Now I think that reputation was completely unearned. I think that these days she is definitely taking some heat. Kara Swisher earlier tweeted, "Sheryl Sandberg and the rest of Facebook executive team, you are presiding over a toxic and dangerous stew of misinformation and purposeful propaganda. And it is a clear abdication of the job that you are charged with. For those of us who know you personally, for shame." And that's a pretty, I imagine that these two women are probably friends in the tech space. And I think, you know, gone are the days where you can just sort of be like, oh, well, I work here, but, like, you know,
right,
I'm doing the best I can. I think that people are fed up enough that I think that even people who have been able to avoid this kind of scrutiny are getting pulled into it.
Right. And yeah, I actually just saw another tweet about the fact that you are now a part of the problem. Even if you weren't the one, or you aren't the one propagating these things, if you work for them and understand this is what's happening, you are complicit to their neglect and or feeding into this disinformation and this use of abuse or for another brand or another conversation or the bigger conversation of the abuse that the presidency has done in the past 4 years and or their followers.
Absolutely. That's such a good point. You know, what's so interesting to me about this is, you know, there was a time in my life where a job at Facebook would have been the most exciting thing in the world for me. But those days are gone because I would never work at Facebook. But, you know, I've often wondered, like, when are we going to see Facebook and some of these platforms that allow for our democracy to be attacked in these ways? When are sort of individual rank and file tech employees going to, when are we going to make it like an uncool place to work, right? Like, I feel like there are so many industries where, you know, if you choose to go into this industry, people might look at you a little bit funny. And I think we're seeing those conversations happen now. But what I also think is very interesting is that at a lot of these companies, oftentimes it's just the rank and file staff who want to be part of the solution. They don't want to be making tools that, like, wreck our democracy and, like, wreck our elections. They want to be, they got into tech because they want to make change. And I think what we really see now is, like, rank and file staffers trying to agitate from within, but the leadership, the people who actually have the power within the organization to do something, not listening to them.
Which happens so often.
Exactly.
They're just looking at numbers and end of story and not listening to what's the actual real world ramifications of what's happening. I was actually using Facebook as my point of trying to see where we were on the election night. Like, okay, this state has been called and this state has been called and this state has been called. And it was really interesting to watch the different people react on Facebook as well. And it's really, really disheartening because it's not just the president and his little minions. It is the Republican Party who are backing him. And that is so, so dangerous for them to sit there and be like, this is all false. This is all not legal votes or illegal votes, which is a whole other rhetoric in itself and so disgusting. But then you start questioning, well,
you just got reelected. Do we need to look at your numbers as well? I mean, what is happening with this conversation? And why are they dissecting it in such a way that people believe parts and bits of lies, but not the whole actuality?
That's such a good point. It's what's so funny is if you look at the different claims that are being made, all of these claims are baseless, but if you look at the different claims that are being made that like, oh, there was a voting irregularity here, there's voter fraud there, so many of them are, like, they couldn't all be true, right? Some of them are contradictory. Right. Some of them, like, are opposite, where you're like, oh, so they were throwing polls in the river and also the Sharpie thing and this watermark thing. Like, it would be, it's not possible for them all to be true. It's just, like, such a, like, mixed bag of wild-ass conspiracies. And no one has stopped, like, we're just, like, picking and people are just picking and choosing the ones that suit them. Like, in some states, they're saying, stop the count. And other states are saying, no, continue the count. It's like, well, which one is it? It can't be both.
Right.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer people will do all kinds of mental gymnastics to believe what they want to believe. So I guess looking at these claims that we saw during the election, I know you've talked about it a little bit, but how did we see them play out? What should we continue to look for? And what ultimately is like the main purpose of these?
It's a great question. You know, definitely Trump was the one I feel leading the charge into this idea that the election was rigged in some way, or, you know, that something fishy happened. To be like absolutely 100% crystal clear, there has been no documented evidence of voting irregularity of any kind in this election. It's just not there. There is no, it's just like end of sentence, period, point blank. And so we see this continued narrative that the election was stolen or rigged. All the things that y'all mentioned, this whole Sharpie Gate thing, this idea that poll workers were ripping up Trump votes, or like that a Biden-Harris van, like something out of Scooby-Doo or something, like a Biden-Harris van. They're smart enough to try to rig an election. They're not smart enough to not have Biden-Harris on the side of the van they pull up in. Sure, makes complete sense. You know, these stories of like a van pulling up and like bags of ballots being like smuggled out and then it like, speeds away. This is stuff from movies, y'all. Like, this is not reality. So all of these like baseless claims, and I think the point is, one, when you have so many different claims of voting irregularity, I think one of the points is just to overwhelm. It overwhelms both like fact checkers and poll workers, people whose job it is to look into this kind of thing. And I think it just overwhelms your average person. When you hear over and over and over and over again all of these stories amplified about voting irregularities and the election being rigged and all of that, eventually when you hear things enough, it doesn't really matter if there's evidence or not. It doesn't really matter if it's true or not. That's how disinformation works. It creates this sort of false reality, and it kind of doesn't even matter if there's evidence or if it's true. And so, unfortunately, the point of all of this is to drive home this idea that our elections are rigged, that the election was stolen, that our democracy does not work. And I have to say, unfortunately, I think in some ways, Trump has been a little bit effective at doing this. I think despite the fact that there have been no documented cases of voting irregularity in this election, we've already seen like Republican leadership using the phrase illegal votes, right? And so even that phrase itself is a misnomer. And I'm so disappointed to see that phrase is making its way into our vocabulary, because you can't have illegal votes if there's no documented widespread voter irregularities or fraud. So it's like, it's like a fiction. And it's disappointing to see the way that this fiction has already been sort of like made real in the minds of some people. And I just think obviously no elected official should be using their platform to lie. But I think when you lie to people about the efficacy of our democracy, that is something that's like truly beyond the pale. Like, just like really sit with that. We have the leader of our country purposely trying to make people lose faith in our democratic system. Like, there are plenty of people who have been in the White House, who've been elected officials that I didn't agree with and I didn't like, but they wouldn't do that. Like, that is a very different thing.
Right. I mean, he kind of, Trump was the basis of having his personal account being constant during his term. No one else did that. No one else had that to this level, especially with the followers. And I did want to ask specifically to the language, how big, obviously it's a big key, but it seems like Trump in himself has figured out that if he makes specific phrases that are grammatically able to be catchy enough, that it spreads like wildfire. How dangerous and how often has that been used, especially for this election? I know that's probably a random ass question, but
no.
I was just thinking about that.
It's a great question. You are exactly right. And what's so annoying about Trump, like, I hate to give him, like, your listeners who, like, don't feel the way that I do about Trump are probably like, we get it, you hate Trump. But the thing that gets me about him is that he's so effective at certain things. And one of those things is just what you said, right? Speaking in sound bites and quotables. And I think, you know, like, even the phrase itself, illegal votes.
Right.
If you didn't know any better, it sounds so reasonable. Like, Ivanka Trump tweeted, I think, the day after the election, we should count every legal vote and not count illegal votes. This shouldn't be controversial. And on its face, you're like, oh, who would disagree with that? But when you actually take it apart, when you have to, like, bring in a little bit of nuance or, like, thoughtfulness around it, you think, wait a minute, there aren't illegal votes. So, like, why even have that be in the conversation? It really creates this, like, false equivalency. But I think you are spot on in that Trump has this ability to speak in sound bites or tweets that can really catch on. Like, think of all these, like, wacky nicknames that he's given people, like Sleepy Joe and, you know, all like Little Marco. Like, I have to give it to him. I know a catchphrase when I hear one. And, like, he really, you can just really tell.
We have a lot more to get into in this conversation. But first, we have a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. One thing I've noticed, and I do attribute this to this spread of misinformation and disinformation and Trump being really effective at this, is my sense of reality is really warped now. Like, I feel like I can't trust things that I should be like, yes, that is the truth. I don't have that anymore. Like, I remember when people were texting me about that Four Seasons Total Landscaping, I was like, this can't be true. And I was like looking at it, like, just, I don't know. Reality.
Yeah. This is amazing. Really,
oh, well, I mean, it was hilarious. I'm glad it was true.
Yes.
But that's just something I feel like this whole election we're going to have to reckon with and all of this misinformation and disinformation. And when we were chatting before, we were talking about being in Georgia, which right before we came on was sort of officially projected to be a blue state. And we have these looming Senate races, two Senate races in our state. So I know that this isn't going to go away anytime soon. But even for people outside of Georgia, now that this presidential election has come and gone, why is it important that we keep having these conversations about disinformation and misinformation?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. Well, one thing, I do want to go back to something that you said about, you know, this feeling of living in a false reality. I definitely identify with that. Like the total landscaping thing was a good example. When the story first broke that Trump had COVID, I remember thinking like, does he really have it? Like, is he just saying that? Like, and it really revealed to me the depths to which I felt like I had been sort of gaslighted by this administration, whereas like I felt like I couldn't trust my own perception of reality. And during the day before the election, my father, who is, you know, 65, he had a health incident. And so he went to the hospital. And let me tell you, and so the issue that he had was like cognitive. He was having trouble with his memory and having trouble kind of like understanding what was going on. He's much better now, but that was the situation on election day. And let me tell you, when we were trying to watch election results, he would be like asleep and then wake up and they would be showing like a little clip of a speech where Trump appears to be, you know, claiming himself the victor. And my dad would be like, wait, did Trump win? And it was so difficult for me to be like, I know that you've been in and out. I can't explain to you why this is not, like, I know you're seeing Trump say that he won on television. All I can tell you is it's not true. I know it seems like it happened, but trust me that it didn't. And I was like, yeah, this is a wild ass thing to have to be explaining to somebody that like, why am I watching Trump on TV say that he won the election when the election does not seem to be over? I was like, I know, Dad, it's wild. What can I tell you? But to your question, you know, in terms of what we should be looking out for now, you know, this is not over. And we will have to continue to be vigilant about disinformation and misinformation, like more so, I think, than we were before. You know, the entire control of our Senate is going to come down to Georgia. We've already seen disinformation on social media, specifically as it pertains to poll workers and vote counters, right? We've had stories of people who had to go into hiding because of rumors spread on social media about the vote count process. And we know that when we get to these Georgia runoffs, that's just going to be worse. And I have to say, the majority of poll workers in this country are women and Black women. And so we know that Black women and women are disproportionate recipients of attacks when it comes to disinformation on social media. And so it's only going to get worse. And that's why it's so important that these platforms and these companies figure out what their commitment is to protecting our democracy now, right? Like it is, we know it's going to happen. It is not enough to just wait and let poll workers be attacked and let Facebook be used to, you know, organize people who want to show up in real life with weapons for like extremist meetings, you know, in real life. We know that these things are threats. We know that these things are going to happen. So what we want is for people to be, the people with power to be proactive at building a plan for what they are going to do when these things happen and to stop them before they start. But, you know, even though we have a winner, a new president, it is not over. And it's just going to be that much more important. Also with the fact that Kamala Harris is going to be in the White House. We know that when Obama was elected, it's not like birtherism and racist attacks on him stopped. In fact, they got worse. Right. And so I think with a Black woman in the White House, we are going to just continue to see these real horrible attacks rooted in her identity continue to flourish.
Right. And then speaking of, you did mention about that the most of the poll workers being women, as well as Kamala Harris, the things that she goes through. How is disinformation and misinformation a gender justice issue? How is that pertaining to women specifically?
In so many different ways. You know, even just look at COVID. The majority of essential workers are women. The majority of people in the healthcare field are women. However, when we have like one of the big topics where disinformation, misinformation flourishes is COVID and how you stay safe with COVID. And so if you have platforms that are allowing for misinformation and false stories pertaining to COVID just flourish, you're hurting the women who are essential workers, who are the majority of the people who are at the front lines of the pandemic right now. healthcare workers, the majority of which are women, being impacted. And so really, when you start pulling these things apart and seeing who is being hurt, which communities are having to shoulder a disproportionate level of harm, it's always women. It is always us. And so, you know, thinking about these things from a perspective of like, oh, well, it just harms everybody equally, that would be great if it was true. But we know that's not true. We know it is women who end up shouldering a disproportionate amount of the impact.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. I was researching some numbers around like the predictions of COVID cases in this winter that's been called a dark winter. And I was so like, I was getting anxious looking at these things. And it's just so frustrating that you have a safety measure that shouldn't have been politicized, but it was. And now people are getting sick and dying because of it. And it is a part of that, of getting these messages from the very top that, you know, don't wear a mask. I don't see the point. It's fine. And seeing these stories. And I mean, to me, they sound ridiculous of claims like, well, you breathe the COVID back in and it's worse if you wear a mask and things like that. But it's working. Like, people are buying into it. Yeah, so you can really see like the effectiveness of this. And right now, specifically, the deadliness of it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you brought that up. I really think if we ever are able to get COVID under control, I think we need to have a real serious conversation as a nation about the way that we allowed sexism and f***ed up attitudes around gender to hurt people. And a lot of those people were women, right? Like, even on top of what the point that you just made about how masks were really feminized, it's women. When you look at who the majority of the people who have like lost wages and lost jobs and checked out of the workforce altogether, it's women, right? Mm-hmm. I've seen story after story about how women have just had to like absorb the blowback of this pandemic. And so on top of that, like we are the ones who are being disproportionately harmed and displaced and, you know, marginalized by the pandemic. And on top of that, like, people are still equating just like the basic common sense protocols of how we can like stay safe with like women, therefore bad, you know, talking about how like wearing a mask makes you like some kind of a like, I don't know, feminized soy boy or something. It really is so harmful. And if there's ever been something that showed us how dangerous and corrosive and toxic like these ideas of gender can be, it should be the pandemic.
Right. I mean, we saw it in just in environmental issues. That was so gendered. Yeah. And you're like, wait, we're trying to save the world. And you want to say you can't do that because it makes you look feminine?
Ugh.
What in the hell is wrong with you? But it seems like when it comes to caring and empathy, it's automatically assumed that that is going to be feminine and that it shows weakness. To show that you care shows weakness. So therefore, don't do it. Ugh. And it's such an absurdity because we talked about this the last time, how Donald Trump's campaign all rode into that masculine is the only way to be. And if we really want this country to be great again, is to go back to the norm of heteronormative ideas of the 1920s, essentially. It is such an absurdity in itself that we would rather look strong, and I say that in a very like loose manner, than to care for others.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's such a, so absurd. And, you know, and then seeing that also is the same thing with the misinformation and disinformation in the politics. I've seen the misinformation that's happening already in our Senate race, where they're taking things out of context and sending it out, where they're allowing for Trump tactics. I don't know if there's going to be an actual term for that soon, where our Republican senators and incumbents are using that and fell fully into that.
Yes.
To the point that we have a QAnon person going into the House that's representing us because they are allowing for this as the norm. And the fact of the matter is, it's still working enough that we have a runoff instead of a win.
Ugh. Like, yes, 1,000 times yes. I could not be, like, snapping my fingers and nodding my head in agreement. And, like, just really think about that. The fact that caring about others, empathy, that's being framed as something that's bad, something that you don't want from your leaders, right? That doesn't make any sense. It's good to care about others. Caring about others is not a bad thing. I think when Biden did his town hall, and just to be clear, like, I'm happy that he's going to be our next president, but like he is not the end all be all of like progressivism or by any means.
Right.
But when he did his town hall, I don't remember who it was, but some Republican was like, oh, it was almost like watching an episode of Mr. Rogers.
Right.
You know, it was just like we get it, you care. And I was like, why is that a bad thing? Like where have we, what world are we living in where, you know, all caps tweets are good. Like all caps tweets about how like you have been cheated, that's good. And like empathy, mm-hmm. that's bad. Like up is down, black is white.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what's wrong with Mr. Rogers?
I know.
We do have some more for you listeners, but first we're going to pause for a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
I think the difference between the left and the right right now, the extreme right, I will say, and the extreme left, is we don't see these people as, I say we, the left does not see people as gods. This is not our choice. This is not someone that like God blessed them into the situation mm-hmm. or whoever you worship made this person for us. It's going to fix everything. No, we're just trying to find out what normal is. And we just really want to get back to the point that we don't have to fight with people every day about, again, the lies about the masks and the lies about whether or not we should shut down CDC or whether we should care or whether we should fight with a 10-year-old girl who cares about her environment. Like, we just want to get to the point where that's not a thing. But we see that the right, like, I have seen so many freaking memes about Jesus touching Donald Trump. Like,
oh my
I have
God.
Never in my life been like, what is with this? With this kind of level of worship for a man who doesn't give a shit. Honestly, in the end, other than wanting to win.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I always tell people as someone who has been in politics and activism and organizing on the left for a very long time. No elected official is like your best friend, right? You are electing someone that you think you can move, that you think you can push, that you are down to be holding accountable for 4 years. And, you know, I'm no huge fan of Biden-Harris. I voted for them. I'm happy they're in the White House, but I'm more happy to spend the next 4 years pushing them and holding them accountable and, you know, making hard asks, right? Like, I think that when you are picking an elected official, you want to pick somebody that you can see yourself holding accountable and not picking, like, this isn't American Idol. You're not picking your, like, you know, your best right. friend for life or, like, someone who you think is going to be, you know, the best ever. It just doesn't work that way. Like, I feel like every politician eventually will break your heart. And so you right. really just got to be thinking strategic about who you pick and who you vote for. But it's certainly, you know, Yeah, like this idea that Trump has been blessed by God or something. I mean, like, I guess I have a lot of questions about people who feel who feel that way, I guess.
Again, so do I, because I'm very, very confused. You know, there's another thought, and this may be a whole episode in itself, and I think we probably will. But the idea, like, when I'm talking about religion, when we're talking about God in general, that that does play on this very heteronormative idea of what is chosen and what is good and what isn't, what is not good. Because, you know, we can talk about the fact that a majority of people who are voting in the right are doing it based on abortion.
Right.
And anti-abortion and their quote-unquote pro-life stance. And that term should be done away with anyway. And it does. It seems like it hones in on women in itself, like especially those who have grown up in religious bases. And I wonder also, because that's what I see in play a lot of the time to get at people for that stance, like the commercials and stuff. One of the big conversations, one of the big points they say is, we are here to support police. We are here to keep the way of life, the American way of life. And it's such a weird rhetoric, but it seems to work for those who are steeped in tradition. As in fact, Judge Alito just has kind of stepped into some controversy because he just finally said what he felt and that he wanted to bring traditional American households back to what it was. And this is like, this is love and this is morality. And it's kind of interesting that we can look at some of that misinformation and making sure they use that as a prop to get those voters and to keep those voters. And it majority works with older white women.
Yes, it really is. It's so effective. You know, I've seen disinformation around abortion. Like, I've seen memes on Facebook, especially, where they're trying to, they'll say like, oh, you're a woman can terminate a pregnancy at, you know, up until the moment that she gives birth. And it's like, no, if someone is doing an abortion that late in the game, something else is going on, right? Like,
right.
Like, I've seen so many instances where it's just outright lies about abortion because disinformers know that these topics that require a little bit of nuance or that are emotionally charged, like those are the ones that really work. And, you know, I think that you're right about it being something that really does move voters. And I have to say, a growing demographic of the Latinx community voted for Trump, and abortion was an issue that they self-reported as something that moved them, that they are not, they're not okay with the fact that the Biden-Harris administration is pro-choice. And so I do think there is so much more work to be done around how we message voters on these topics that require a little bit of sensitivity and a little bit of nuance to discuss. I think that we have so much work to be done. And I think on the left, I'm excited to see us starting to have some conversations around like, well, how can we provide off-ramps for people who have been misled by very savvy disinformers? To be clear, I don't know what that looks like. That is like, I'm happy to have those conversations. But I do think, you know, we have a country where a good chunk of people have been really cruelly misled by very effective disinformers around things like QAnon, around things like reproductive care. And I do want to build off-ramps for those people to be like, listen, things got wild there and you got taken by somebody who did not have your best interests at heart. Here's how we get you back to where you need to be. You know, I want to be part of those conversations.
Right. I mean, that is a big question because I definitely have, you know, we've talked about it before with my family in itself, trying to have this conversation and just literally just fights and crying. Like, that's what ends up happening. But how do you approach this in a way that you can have a constructive conversation without being angry with one another? Because, you know, of course, they have their ideas and I've heard my parents' ideas and I grew up under my parents' ideas. But I came from that to this to seeing the practical, like, this is where the lies were and this is why this is incorrect. And I've been with friends who have had to have as what they would call late-term abortion and not, by the way, I've heard them recently say after-birth abortions and I'm still trying to figure that out. So I'm like, are you talking about killing babies? It's happening. So that in itself has been a new platform too. I was like, y'all are going real, real into this. But talking to them about their tragedy and having to be there and the fact that this, like, going through these painful things and then being accused of doing something so horrible as in, like, you killed your child.
Right.
You did this on purpose. And I, just to watch that conversation and trying to sit down, and I'm like, you understand what you're doing, right? You are vilifying the very people who are with you and want these children and love these, you know, love these unborn babies, as you want to, you know, whatever you want to call and term them. It's the fact that they intended to have this child, but they couldn't. And that is tragedy in itself. But how do you have these conversations of, like, we need to break down and be able to communicate with each other? And also, I need to be able to tell you, hey, that video you just posted, yeah, it's bullshit. And
yes.
it is ridiculous. How do you have these conversations?
So I have a lot to say about this. One, I think on the abortion part of this specifically, I think it really comes down to abortion storytelling. There have been so many amazing groups like We Testify, shout out to Abortion, who have been doing such amazing work in this space, mm-hmm. really helping people tell their stories about their abortion experience in a way that can counter some of this misinformation and disinformation, right? I also think, you know, for heterosexual folks out there, or folks who have, like, male-identified folks out there, I don't like the fact that oftentimes, talking about abortion and talking about reproductive care is just seen as, like, a woman's job or a woman's right. role. When we know that so many men out there have benefited from abortion. And I don't like the fact that it's just, like, on us as women to be bearing our souls on something that is very sensitive and, like, difficult to talk about sometimes. It's just up to us. And so I think more men should be stepping up to the plate and be like, yeah, abortion impacted my life in these ways, and here's what it looks like for us, or here's what it looked like for me, right? It shouldn't just be on us to shoulder this burden. In terms of how we talk to our families about some of the disinformation that they can get wrapped up in, PEN America Foundation has a wonderful guide, if you just Google PEN America and misinformation, on how you talk to your family, you know, about disinformation. And some of the things they recommend are, do it in private. Like, you don't want to be doing it on a public Facebook post. One, because you might be just, like, pushing that wild post into more people's feeds. And then also, it's like, it's weird when you get called out in public. People can mm-hmm. be already on the defensive. So if you do it in private, if you send them a private message or call them on the phone, it might be a little bit better, so that they're not coming from a place of, like, well, all my followers are watching this interaction and I have right. to react in a certain yeah. way. So doing it in private. And also just something else that you said, Sam, like, keeping empathy at the front of your mind, right? So, like, mm-hmm. remember, trying to put yourself in this person's shoes. I have found that 9 times out of 10, people who are getting caught up in lies and distortions on social media especially, they are scared, they are fearful, they are looking for answers, they are looking for explanations, they're looking for anything that makes how they feel or what they think or their worldview, they're looking for anything to make that feel okay. And mm-hmm. these disinformers know that, and they are right as rain, they will be there to fill that gap. And so knowing kind of a little bit about the emotional situation that somebody who is getting taken by disinformation, knowing a little bit about where they might be and being a little bit willing to, like, have a conversation that acknowledges that. One of the reasons why I got involved in disinformation in the first place is that there's not really another way to say it. I feel like I lost a good friend to conspiracy theories and disinformation, and I feel like I waited too late to do the things that I'm suggesting that people do now. Like, I spent a lot of time getting into, like, heated back and forths on Facebook, where we would be arguing in the comments and then people would be, like, texting me about it and it would be, like, a big tense thing. I later realized that I was just pushing him further and further into this kind of thinking. And, mm-hmm. you know, we are not friends now. And mm-hmm. I look back and I think, gee, you know, what would it have been like if I had took the time to talk to my friend, have a real conversation about where he was at and why he was being drawn to some of these wilder conspiracy theories on the net, right? Like, you know, I would have probably found out that he had just moved to a new city and was really lonely. I would have probably found out that, you know, conspiracy theory groups online offer a kind of, like, 24/7 online community that he was probably craving. I would have found out all of this stuff, but I never took the time. I did everything wrong. And I want people to know that if someone that you love, if someone who you have been in community with, you see them, you see yourself losing them, you have options that you can take. You don't have to do what I did, which is just do everything wrong and then, like, you know, bitch about it on Facebook and then, like, be salty in the comments. you have resources that can help you figure out how to have this conversation. But I do think we need to be having these conversations. You know, I think that people that get wrapped up in this, they need to know there are off ramps. They need to know that like they will not be shunned if they come out of it. I think that's very important. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great advice. Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned some groups already, but if you could go over some ways that these groups are fighting disinformation and misinformation, and for folks who are interested, how they can get involved.
Yeah, well, PEN America is a great resource. They have a great guide, as I mentioned before. I would be remiss if I did not mention my own organization, Ultraviolet. We are a gender justice organization that tries to build political and social power for women and non-binary folks. And we actually put out an ad calling out Sheryl Sandberg about disinformation on Facebook, so definitely check that out. And if you want to get involved, you can go to act.weareultraviolet.org and check out our campaign calling Facebook to be more accountable for their platforms.
Love it.
Yeah, I love it.
Boom.
is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up? And then obviously you can shout out where listeners can find you.
I would just say, I know things, you know, earlier today, Annie, you called our upcoming winter our dark winter. And boy, do I feel that. But I would just say, you know, stuff is hard right now. Stuff is dark right now. But we have each other. We got this. Like, I don't know. I guess I feel like so much of my day is full of doom and gloom and preparing for the worst. But, you know, I think we have each other. We have spaces like Stuff I Never Told You to build community and have conversations. And so when times are scary or hard or cold and dark, just come back to that. Just remember that. We have community. We have each other. We're not powerless. We're powerful in each other.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to take that little bit and put it on my phone so I can play it every play. Just to clip that out.
Yeah, I love that. Because right before we were talking, I said how I found this article that said, how are you has become a triggering question. So I like this positive note. And I definitely have been feeling it. Which was nice. It's almost like something was coming back to life at me that I hadn't realized had just sort of died off for a little bit. So that's great. And thank you as always for coming by, Bridget, and having these conversations with us. We love it. They're so valuable. Where can the listeners find you?
You can find me on Twitter @BridgetMarie. You can find me on Instagram @BridgetMarieinDC. And if you want to have more conversations about how women are showing up on the internet, check out my podcast on iHeartRadio, this very network, called There Are No Girls on the Internet.
Yes, definitely do that. I'm so prepared, Bridget, for the fan fiction episode. Oh, I'm there.
We got to do it. We have to do it. It's happening. Yeah. It's happening.
Yes. You got to do this one. She's ready. She is ready. You're going to learn so many terms.
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Honestly, you should probably just like mute and just like, I don't know, do something else and kind of pretend you're listening to me and let me get it out of my system. I wouldn't be offended at all.
I love it.
Well, I look forward to that. And we look forward to having you back for the next entry in what I'm sticking with the winternet, but if listeners have another better name, I'm open.
I like winternet. I think it's got a nice ring to it.
Yeah. Thank you. I need constant validation on my title names.
That's why we keep you around, Bridget. For the constant validation.
For titles.
And good information. But also.
Also that. Listeners, if you want to reach us, you can email us at stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram @StuffMomNeverToldYou. Thanks as always to our super producer, Andrew Howard.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because Boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at CedarPoint.com.